Underground Espionage episode 55, Tara.
Ooh, angel numbers.
How is it going? Is it?
It's, you know what? It was going pretty bad. And then it got better. So, here we are.
You know, look, listeners, you're with us. You're with us on our journeys. You're with Tara on her journeys of pain and surgery. And this
pain
week,
and pleasure.
Pleasure and pain. And this week is no exception after our great talk with Jesus and Kira last week. And, of course, before I forget, got to make sure to go to the Honk live event this Sunday, May 24th
at the Elysian.
I call it these things, but we will be DJing for the night, so just supplying the atmosphere in between the acts. They're going to be screening some old, really rare 8mm porn. Gray is doing a Laughing Chance set. There's going to be other performances, and it's going to be a great time. Hopefully the first of many. You know, we were even talking about maybe the next one you and I would do like a live podcast segment.
Yes.
Which would be a lot
of
fun.
And I'm excited. I want to wear clown makeup, so.
Well, we'll see what happens. But after that great talk, it wasn't an unexpected thing. It's something that we knew was coming up. But Tara had some more teeth surgery.
I like to just say I got implants.
Well,
you know, that's what I've been telling everybody all week. I'm going in. I'm going to go get some implants. But they were mouth implants. And, you know, it was sold to me in a much more chill way than it actually came off.
I'm a bit
irritated how it went. Yeah, they undersold the invasiveness and the fact that I have to be on, like, the strongest possible antibiotics so that I don't get an infection in my bone, which make me super crazy and sick. So
you've
been
a wreck.
Really, I've been a complete wreck.
Actually, right now, you're really switching it on for the pod. We'll see how long this one goes because fading could come at any minute.
I'm sweating right now.
We might turn this AC
on. Well, it's not because
it
I'm hot. I've just had the like cold sweats for a bit. But again, it's all fun. It's a journey. And you know, I'll say for everyone out there who may have to have a dental implant, you know, some people may tell you it'll be fine. It's okay. It's not. It sucks. Like, you know, it's temporary. You know what I mean? But it's incredibly uncomfortable. The dental chair was incredibly uncomfortable for 2 hours, hurt my back. Like, it's entirely unpleasant. Like, the price is unpleasant. The procedure is unpleasant. Everything about it is incredibly unpleasant. However, the pleasant part is at the end of it, you have, like, you know, teeth.
I mean, that's the idea, at
you
least.
Know, so it's
far,
like, yeah, it's a trade-off.
Yeah, we'll see.
Far, I still have not had the big guys stuck in there, so I can't wait to get them in this mouth, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not
fill
done.
Me full of teeth.
I can only fill you full of, you know, knowledge about the deadly spawn. I can only fill you full of, you know, excitement about going to the Honk live event.
And
I can fill you full of the announcement from this week, that being that, yes, indeed, eroticism will be a part of the Never Surrender Hospital Fest in Japan next April, Osaka, the very first eroticism live set. Tara, the response has been incredible. I'm so thrilled. I was telling someone yesterday how excited I am about how excited people are for you and for eroticism. So
I am really, really excited. I'm really honored. And also I am filled with a drive to not suck, I guess. So,
well, that's definitely
it's
not
like,
going to happen.
Like being like nervous is not the right word, but it's more like
just
I'm just motivated. I'm like incredibly motivated to make sure that it goes off. So that is super exciting for me because like of all the people like on that stage, like I cannot disappoint.
I mean, look, sharing the stage with obviously some, you know, I was really looking at everything and thinking about throughout the years our inspirations and your inspirations. And I mean, you're sharing the stage with one of your biggest, Mayuko Hino.
I mean, so
that's
so
incredible.
Excited.
White House, Black Leather Jesus. I mean, these are projects that have been with us forever and that have constantly given us inspiration and constantly filled us with just excitement anytime we think about these. I mean, those are just three, obviously. Prurient, you know, obviously excited to play with, you know, Geography of Hell, who, you know, we've gotten to play with before in various form, you know, various projects. I think Clay Rendering did last time in the at the LA Fest, I think, was the last time we played with Geography. But it's just the whole lineup just looks insane. And, you know, Star, obviously, you know, that's...
I can't wait. I was just cleaning today and I found my Star t-shirt. Which is one of the most absurd shirts that I own.
Great.
It's a
giant
stop sign that says Star on it.
Yeah.
But it's that, like, thick print, like, from the 90s. Like, you know, when your shirt would be, like, sticking out from your body because the, like, the decal was so thick. Like, bum t-shirts
it's like,
or whatever,
it's like
cross
he
colors.
It's like he requested, like, a five pass.
Exactly. It is. It's like it won't fold properly because of that stop sign. And it's so obnoxiously huge. So I'm so happy that I found that shirt.
But yeah, I mean, the whole fest is exciting. Of course, it's all been announced. And of course, it is very close to selling out. So make sure to get your tickets ASAP. I don't. This will definitely not be. Tickets will not be available
in
a couple months, if not maybe like a month. Like I'm predicting by June where it's out, so don't mess up. You have a whole year to figure out, you know, everything. Like we've told people, you know, once you're in Japan, if you haven't gone yet, it's actually very easy to get around. That was our big question the first time we went, was translation going to be hard? Was it going to be hard to get around? And honestly, everywhere we went was very cool. Most every restaurant had an English menu, and even if they just realized that you don't speak Japanese, they were always very helpful and cool.
Yeah.
We never had one issue at all. And getting around is no issue. You literally plug in Google Maps and it will tell you what subway stops to get off. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? It's no problem at all. So, look, is it going to be a...
Yeah, the only problem was that I would just constantly get distracted and be like, ooh, look at that. Ooh,
no
look at
problem
that.
There. Yeah. You know, we just can't, you know,
ooh,
we can't
now they're
wait to
gotcha
go
bomb.
Back. So, everyone get ready, gear up. But, hey, if you have a little extra stashed aside, of course, this weekend, the Vinegar Syndrome sale is on.
Oh, my God.
And you
keep adding to that cart.
Obviously, we you know, encourage everyone to pick up, you know, anything from Saturn's Core. Obviously, Ross, a great friend of the podcast, and just the label we support the hardest. You know, that's a pretty much we're just grabbing anything we hadn't gotten around to yet to pick up. So obviously get that, and, you know, whatever strikes your fancy. Of course, Mel, you've seen, you know, we definitely need to do a classic porn episode here soon. It's been a minute.
I think it's been since
Passions of Carol that we did a classic porn app. So
really? Well,
like a classic porn app. Yeah. Like I said, a classic porn app, and we have been requested to do another modern porn app in the vein of Very Wednesday Adam. So look, we hear it. We got it. We're going to make all these things happen, but
I got to heal up a little bit first.
Exactly. But today, Tara picked this one, and I'm so excited you picked this one. And it had been a long time since we've seen. Every time we watch it, we love it more than the last time.
Yeah, blown away.
And this time is no exception. Tara, what made you pick the Deadly Spawn for this episode?
It could be the 100 billion teeth in it that made me
fresh
in my mind, like just thinking about all these teeth and how nice it would be if I had like 1,000 teeth and then I could lose a few and not have to worry. But I think that plays it. And then also it just, I hadn't thought about it a while. And then
same.
I was like, I have a Deadly Spawn t-shirt. And
you
then thinking about, I saw my t-shirt and I was like, we should fucking do the Deadly Spawn.
You do.
And I did forget to mention something really interesting about my surgery. Like, I know it's just dreary talking about dental surgeries all the time, but I just want to say this. I had this thing called a sinus lift, which is like a horror movie. So I feel like I need to
We didn't go into this. Yes, no. Sorry. I
wasn't even going to go into it.
You should. Like, the people want to hear about your...
Well, I don't know if they do, but this part is something I think that not everybody's had. So I just want to share this. And this is the part that I think was undersold to me. And that is just like they told me at first I didn't need a sinus lift. And then I came back and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to do the sinus lift. Well, to do the sinus lift... The way it was explained to me is that your sinuses, your teeth go into your sinuses. And if you like lost a tooth for a while, sometimes your sinuses and your bone density is lost. So their sinuses will come closer to your bones. So in order to put an implant, they have to lift the sinus up so that you don't perforate it. So you don't want a perforated sinus because that means that your tooth hole is like a hole into your sinus hole and your nose hole, right? So that means, like, if you, for example, drank a bunch of milk, you could shoot it out your nose.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what happens if they put an implant in and perforate your sinus. But you say, how do you lift a sinus? Because they say it's like the inner membrane of an eggshell. Like, there's the eggshell, then the inner membrane is kind of like the texture of your sinus. So they take this, like, thing that looks like a ice pick, like rubber, though, and then they tap it with a hammer, and then they tap this thing, like this metal thing, into your bone in your jaw, in my case my upper jaw next to my nose, and they're tapping on it with a hammer, and it is, they keep saying, like, this might hurt or might feel uncomfortable, and let me know if you have any pain. And it's not that it's pain, it's just that you're hyper aware of somebody, like, hammering with metal implements into your fucking face. Like, you feel every bit of the blow.
It's insane.
And she's like, we're going millimeter by millimeter. So they, like, basically stick this ice pick into the hole, and then they tap it, watching the, like, measurements on the millimeters to see how many millimeters they want to go up. But if they perforate it, they have to immediately stop, pack it with something, let it heal, and then you have a perforated hole into your sinuses, which means you're more prone to infection, because anything that you eat in your mouth could get up into your hole and infect your sinuses, and then that could lead to, like, a brain infection.
No, it is. It's completely crazy.
And
they
it's
said
like,
they
why did they not? And
they
then,
acted like this was, like, the most nothing thing.
No, and then the craziest thing was, they were like, you can't blow your nose for 2 weeks.
Okay.
You can't swish your mouth vigorously, drink through a straw, because that creates a vacuum and it may suck out the membrane and perforate it and cause, like, life-threatening perforation. And you can't blow your nose. I'm like, wait, what do you mean you can't blow? I'm, like, highly allergic to everything. They're like, no, you can't blow your nose. I'm like, what do you mean I can't fucking blow my nose? And they're like, let it drip out and just tap it.
This,
like,
has
are
been,
you kidding?
This has been one of the toughest parts of this whole thing.
It's a nightmare.
Tara going to blow her nose and me having to basically, like, dive and, like, grab
no!
the Kleenex out.
Well, I'm just getting over being sick, too. So yes. I'm not, like, great. And, like, can you imagine if I get sick? I'm just going to blow my brains out of my nose.
I know.
I'm going to, like, I don't know, maybe something like that.
Look.
And then they're like, if something, like, gritty and bloody comes out, like, let us know immediately if you, like, comes out of your nose. I'm like, oh, like if a like a bloody, gritty, like, bone mass of gore comes out of my nose, yeah, I'll let you know. Like, you don't have to tell me that, but sure. This is so rude. Like, this you should say this shit before the surgery so as many can know.
Yeah.
And we almost did it before we went to Palm Springs.
Dude, thank God.
Thank God we didn't do it before we went to fucking Palm Springs. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. And then they're like, well, I'm not going to say. They were like, don't drink alcohol for like 4 weeks. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? Stupid.
Tara. Stupid. Well, so right now we have a nice glass of...
It's a small glass of wine. But you know what? I read the studies. There are no studies. They just think that it's bad for your healing mouth because it dehydrates you. And I'm like, well, then I'll have a vitamin water with a glass of wine.
And it's also like, hey, you don't know me, okay?
It's also like, hey, chill out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Take
it down.
You're
springing all this shit on you.
Yeah, you can't,
like,
blow,
you know,
your nose.
Yeah.
You can't blow your nose. You can't suck. I mean...
What the fuck am I supposed to do then? This is like half of my day. Ruined.
And part of my day is clearly ruined.
Oh, my God.
So it's
assholes.
Like, you know, we're
2 out of 10. Do not recommend dental implants.
Absolutely.
It only gets 2 stars because at the end you're supposed to have functional teeth. And we'll find out if that happens. Anyway, I will bore... I want
no,
to bore
think,
everyone with a little
look,
gore, but just a little cautionary tale. If you're looking into it,
no,
hit
I think
me
everybody
up when you're thinking about it. Just consider that timing.
I think everybody loves hearing about your journeys because, hey, look, it's all part of our life here in the underground.
Let's all be miserable together.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you what, Deadly Spawn is, you know, truly, it's an underground movie. You know, super, super low budget, estimated around 20 to 25,000. Really just about as you know, small crew as you can get. Also, like, wasn't easy, but they worked with what they had. And really what comes out is I think this is just I can't imagine showing this to someone them not being like, dude, that's awesome. You
like,
know what I mean?
I like, don't I know this like 16mm, I know it's low budget, but it doesn't come off as low budget. Like, I've seen some high budget films that look and have a much shittier feeling than this film. Like, I would never guess. It is gorgeous. It is really well done. The shots are clever.
Somewhere.
The people are clever. It's wild.
Oh, was it when we were at Mermaid this week, something, there was an ad for something like on the one of the TVs. Yeah. It might have been like a Star Wars thing or something. And I was like, this is what that looks like. Like, I was so shocked at how like shitty it looks.
Yes.
And it's like, this is all practical effects. This is all like completely like just a small crew of people. Very small. Basically, the effects were done by like this one dude. You know, one dude and, you know, and
well, this one dude who came went on to be a very famous artist and did many.
The John Dodds, the he is the man who is behind the Spawn. Look at us getting that info.
Oh my God.
I know. People come to us. People come to us for that really, really deep, hardcore, behind the scenes info.
Oh my God, I'm so hardcore.
Yeah, we are so hardcore. Sorry. We are not you know, I look at the Sin Syndicate boys for like really great research on what they do.
Yes, he's gone Vesteria on to do boys. Poltergeist 3, Ghostbusters us. 2, Death Becomes
I mean
Her,
he had to
Longtime Companion, A Kiss Before Dying, The Santa Claus, Alien Resurrection, and the X-Files. Like,
yeah, I mean he had to, because I mean this is
Death Becomes Her, fucking
great,
classic.
Great
also
movie.
Classic practical effects.
Yeah, and again, like the aliens and they look so good, and the way they were done is so unique and such a, again, it's DIY, so they were just figuring out how to do this on their own with basically no budget. And what's also cool is you see the Deadly Spawn a lot. Like,
yes.
it's not one of those where you only get to see it in the last 5 minutes. You see it a lot, and you see it with the actors a lot, which, again, a lot of times in these movies you don't. It'll either be like because it's too hard to, you know, to do any movement, so they do that
with
off
the
screen.
And
no, he was manning the Spawn.
Yes,
and the actors are in it with the Spawn, which in this type of movie, like I said, a lot of times it's not that way. So everything about it just adds up to just one of those movies. You're immediately into, not only because you know the alien's going to look amazing, but this setting of this house in New Jersey.
Yeah, so it's. This is 1982, 1983.
Yeah, made in about
thereabouts.
81. And again, it is a fractured shoot. The director sort of left after a certain point, and this John Dodds guy was saying that he wanted to be the director at a certain point. So he did some scenes. Mm-hmm. Douglas McEwen, who really did write and direct this movie, basically did the whole movie.
And it was filmed.
It was a bit fractured.
And the majority of it's filmed in illustrator Tom Hildebrandt's house. Tim Hildebrandt.
And who's the dad of the kid.
And who has done so many illustrations for like comic books, posters. Like he did the Lord of the Rings Star Wars film poster.
You like the old school
stuff from like Magic the Gathering. Like his art, I just think of like Magic the Gathering. Like, yes.
Very cool.
So he's amazing. But that also explains why the home is so goddamn aesthetic.
It looks so
there's
great.
So much painted wood in it, like the painted table, the painted cabinets,
the
like everything, the wallpaper. Again, there's no like dreary minimalism happening in this place whatsoever.
No, hell no. And we'll say that most of the information we will be relaying in this episode will be coming from the essential classic Nightmare USA book by Stephen Thrower. So there's a great Deadly Spawn section, which is how we found about this movie when we got this low so many years ago. I don't know how available Nightmare USA is anymore. I mean, ours is the hardcover. It's beat up. It's tattered. But I will never get rid of it.
Well, it's mostly beat up from when Steve Perry, our dachshund, was a puppy. She liked to chew on anything she could find, and she did a fair amount of chewing on the old Nightmare USA.
But I mean,
but
this is just one that we go through all the time. So yeah, most
not
of
as
information.
Bad as my chicken book, which she ate most of it.
That is very true. Well, Tara, why don't you set up the Deadly Spawn for the people?
I mean, basically, what happens is you have a meteorite crash land into a small New Jersey town, and out from this crash landing comes a bunch of aliens, and they are ravenous for any food source. They prefer human meat, and they grow at a rapid rate, and that's all you need to know.
That's basically all you need to
know. And I lost a lot of steam when I was saying that, because I immediately was like, was it a meteorite or is it a meteor? But a meteor is what's just in the sky, and a meteorite touches ground. So I said the right thing, but then I questioned myself, so I stopped thinking in any way about like what I was saying. So apologies.
It's all good. I mean, it is sort of unclear as to like...
Well, I know we have a lot of scientists in this film.
Right.
And I don't want them to be disappointed because one of them did survive.
Well, and most of them survived. Actually, only one of them died.
Well, no, only two of them were scientists.
Oh, right.
The other guy was a doofus and he had a girlfriend who was hot. And then there was the guy who was a scientist and then the chick who was like really into dissecting things. And she was also pursuing a science degree.
So. Well, this is that great thing, much like Phantasm, where the main...
psychologist.
Where the main cast is, of course, there's the kid, the 13-year-old kid, and then older teenagers, college-age kids are the main cast. So that's got that great Phantasm vibe. I mean, Phantasm more so because it feels like there's literally no adults in the world of Phantasm.
Yes, yes.
There are adults in this, and actually the adults are the first two people. Well, after the campers get killed, the first two people we see actually get killed by the monster are the parents. And
so you have youthful protagonists.
Yeah, which is always nice. And the kid's great in this, I think. So it gives that great atmosphere already. You get that atmosphere, you know, early 80s. And it is unclear as far as like, okay, is the spawn, you know, it's this monster, this giant spawn, but like the little spawns, did it come from that? Or are they on their own? Does this deadly spawn just spawn these little guys? You know what? You don't
was
really
it
need
like,
to
was
know.
The meteorite like a giant egg? And then it just kind of broke open and they all kind of like came out of it?
Yeah, you don't
or
really
were they
need to
like
know.
Little teeny tiny eggs? And then once they got into our atmosphere, they could just really thrive. And then they kind of went hog wild. I mean, look, that's the great premise of the deadly spawn. Like,
yeah.
What is it? All the wonderful things that you can think about. But just to begin, we do start out with a meteorite and it's red hot. But the thing that for me, watching this as an adult, watching this again, it's just so remarkable. The colors, like, I mean, maybe just like the version that we watch was so good, but the blues and the reds are
popping.
Looks great. There's such attention to aesthetics. You know what I mean? Like, I think that it is very artfully done, and the people who tend to praise this film are like, well, given the low budget, it's a pretty good effect that people use. And they had some like clever tricks. And I'm like, fuck that. Given any budget, like they use really great shots. Their lighting was good. They knew what came off well and thought about it and executed it well. You know what I mean? Like, I think that in any budget, people cannot use what they got well. So that aside, like just seeing the meteorite come, looking at the blues, looking at the reds, you see the creature slithering. You don't give it the big reveal. Then we have campers in a tent, which love this type of tent. Like, it
yeah,
feels
you know
like
it.
A tent. Like, I would want to be in this type of tent. It's like a thick fabric tent. You know what I mean? It's like stuck up on a tree, like old school tent. But then you get the light from the inside of the tent and you see the shadow of the monster and like devouring people from the inside. But again, it's a really clever way to not start with the full reveal, but to kind of understand what you're dealing with, but also be intrigued by the silhouette, right? Because you know immediately
fully
that you're not dealing with something of Earth origin, you know what I mean? But then you get that great shot of the miniature house and the landscape.
I love
like
it.
And I would say that's the one that's probably like the most like, oh, that's like a miniature,
but I love
the landscape, but it looks so good.
I love it.
You know
I
what
love
I mean?
The
like
miniature.
Like it looks like when you go down to somebody's basement and they like had someone in their family who was like a model train enthusiast and like clearly so much time went into it and they have like a dollhouse with a train and a mountain and like the lines and you're just like, fuck, this is so cool. Like it's got that type of vibe. So it's just so charming. And then from our crazy miniature house and landscape that very much looks like model trains of yore, which are just wonderful. We get to a home with gorgeous wallpaper everywhere.
Amazing.
Gorgeous painted crown molding.
Amazing.
And a really reasonable wife who just does not want to get out of bed. She's like, oh, it's too
raining.
Early. It's raining. I don't want to have to do it today. Husband ain't having it. But I really love that she has her hair set. It's all curled up, ready to go.
Yep.
She's wearing a pinafore, like a, you know, a sheer chemise.
Yeah,
nightgown.
How great is that?
And it's just like, she's a mom, you know what I mean? But she's going to wear an absolutely sheer, sexy little number to
hey,
sleep
you
in.
Know what?
At no point of wearing that to sleep in, by the way. I just want to, because it's not like somebody comes to the door and you can just like open the door wearing it. It's just, she's just titillating.
Yeah, you know what? Hats off to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's great.
The rain goes throughout, because the movie basically takes place over a day, which is cool. And yeah, they said the rain does give a really great atmosphere, but they said that, of course, that was an issue for consistency. So part of the thing is they would have someone basically shooting a garden hose and having to get it, you know, and spray it and have it be right, because then obviously it wasn't raining every day. I mean, some days it was, yeah, some days it wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, this is filmed out, you know, again, on weekend when people could do it. This wasn't done like in some week long shoot. You know, yeah, this is done over time. And so they said that was one of the difficult things about the film. But I do think the rain gives a really cool atmosphere.
Yes. And we have this, I don't know what started this type of kid. Maybe it was just at the time when like monster magazines were around, Fangoria was around. The precocious teen who was able to make really well-made monster masks.
Well, Tara, I'll tell you where it came from, especially in this movie. It came from writer, director Douglas McEwan, because that was him growing up. And it was immediately him. And he said he wanted to put that in the movie. That was him. You know, it's Corey Feldman in Friday 4.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's such a great, I love that character. But Douglas McEwan said 100% it was him as a kid.
That is, yeah, using the flash powder, like going, I mean, you know, the things that we could get at the like, magic shop, joke shop places, like magic / joke shop, like they were really wild. Like the flash powder, like you could get it. Do you remember getting flash paper? I mean, played with it all the time.
No, I didn't, but I mean, I remember it. Yeah,
like you could just go in, like I remember as a kid, like, you know, you get dropped off at the mall or something and you go into that place, and I would buy like flash paper and you just light it and it's like boom and makes like a big flash. Like it was just like we throw it at each other. It was fun. I mean, the things, much like this flash powder, made me think about that. I miss it. We should get some.
But I mean, Tara, before we're introduced to the kid, I mean, we get two deaths right away and we get to see the deadly spawn, which is great because you don't wait too long. You get to live with the deadly spawn for most of this movie.
No, the whole time. But it does do a really good job building tension and building anticipation because, you know, we have after the campers, the deadly spawn crawling in through a basement window or through the cellar. I don't remember which one. It's one of the two, basement, hey, cellar, one of the two. Hey, who knows? And then kind of camping out. And truly, it's a great place. Like, if you're going to be a deadly spawn, apparently it's a good place to just hide out and wait for people to come to you. You know what I mean?
It's raining. It's wet. You just sort of, I guess, spawning spawn. I mean,
yeah,
it feels like it,
to be
right?
Spawning spawn. Like, it seems to have, like, a few spawns off of its body. And then it's got all those little, like
swimmers,
like jizzy things, tadpole things.
And they're going, I like when they're going under the carpet and up the walls and everything.
Yeah, it's a really nice effect. So it's a great place to hang out and spawn.
But I mean, and also these deaths are like, they're pretty gory. That's the thing, is like this movie does not skimp on the gore. I mean, a lot of times you think of, you know, a lot of the early 80s movies in some respects, you know, obviously there's plenty of just full-on gore movies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you think of the Fridays, you think of the, you know, movies like that, and they're like, not that gory. Halloween's not that gory.
Well, it is.
This has tons of gore in it.
And it's like, you think, I think the ante has been upped so much that in our minds, they were really hyper violent, but not so much. It would be like four or five people. You know what I mean? Like three or four people.
But even the actual blood, there's just not much.
And
but this
pretty dry.
Has plenty
this
of
This is
it.
Wet and bloody, but it's not gross.
No, you know right. What I mean? Right. It's not like a Beyond the Darkness with like actual intestines. This definitely has a.
This is not like I want to make my audience puke.
You're having a good time watching a monster movie, but it is, you know, it's blood soaked. And I think that's also what makes this movie stand out.
Yeah. So we have the rain being established. But again, like in terms of filmmaking, like this has a really followable plot, but it also does elements like, it's raining, the paper's wet, the basement's wet. Like, they're incorporating all of those elements in and, like, telling a nice story. I think it's great. Then we have the cool kid who likes to make monster masks. Then we have the scientific brother who's just, you know, in college. He's so smart. He likes to use, you know, Latin just casually and, like, talk about...
Like college kids do.
yeah, taxonomy and like just naming things by their scientific name, not by their like regular name. You know, he's like, oh, I think it's from the classification Annelida. Annelida, meaning yeah, like, worm. Oh, right. Oh, it does. He's like, I just was going to call it a big worm. And he was like, that's what it means. Worm, segmented worm. Anyway, things like this. But so we have this precocious scientist brother who just does not believe in any of the sci-fi that his brother loves. And then we have the psychologist uncle who's hanging out for the summer with his wife, who I absolutely adore. And then they have a really cool family because grandma's having a vegetarian brunch and no one's into it.
Yeah, that's, of course, you know, one of the most memorable scenes in the movie. And the vegetarian luncheon is so funny. The main course being lentils and her famous green sauce.
Yes.
She likes being a vegetarian so much she has a pen that's shaped like a pea pod.
She's so into being a vegetarian. It's great. She just loves the animals. She has ceramic animals. I really love her.
Thing is that lunch is not going to be vegetarian for too long.
No. Well, we'll get there.
I thought we would just go right
there.
We're
just going to go there. Well, we can talk about the electrician.
I mean, great death.
We got the kid. We have an electrician who's needed because everything's on the fritz, which brings another piece of meat down.
Yeah, and
then the kids when they're coming home and they find.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, look, I was I'm just chatting about the deadly spawn, T.
Okay,
you know what I mean? I'm just chatting about the deadly spawn. You know, we don't have to be.
Well, we can talk about the vegetarian brunch.
Well, no, now
vegetarian mom's great.
Now I want to talk about the
kids. Her friends brought ratatouille.
Now you switched me up. You know what I mean? You're sending the
which kid do you want to talk about?
When he goes down the first time, because it is because that's when you really, really see a ton of the deadly spawn itself, and you see him establish that our deadly spawn can't see. Important.
Yeah, much like I was thinking of Tremors.
Totally,
I mean,
thinking
you're only
of Tremors.
Thinking of Tremors. Tremors, like everybody's household had like those favorite films, you know, that they would watch. And Tremors is one of those that we had the VHS, and we would watch it all the time. And it didn't hurt that Reba McEntire was in it, but yeah, we liked Bloodsport. We liked Tremors. Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Coming to America. I'm trying to think of the other like really important films. Blazing Saddles.
But yeah,
those were the important films.
Tremors is, I'd watch Tremors again. It's been a minute.
Hell yeah, I'd watch Tremors again. I watched Tremors 2. Fuck it.
Tremors definitely.
I know, but there's a whole variety of Tremors.
We watched Tremors 1 and 2 a few years ago.
I like 1 and 2. 3.
I don't remember it.
It's not. I remember being like.
But yeah, so. But when the kid goes down there, you know, he's down there for a real long time. He's down there the entire time of the luncheon, according to the way the film is edited.
Holding still, being clever, finding ways to distract this blind, bloodthirsty spawn.
But it's kind of cool though because we just get to see it, and then we get to see the slithering through the water in the basement. It just looks so good,
and they look great. And the tadpole types like look like they're actually like fish. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
Don't they kind of feel like they just like cut the fins off a real fish?
Yeah, and that's the thing is it looks amazing.
Yeah, yeah, I absolutely agree. They sure do.
But yeah,
he's so clever. Watching the kids sweat in the basement, I think he's a good actor. He's very serious, you know. And he had gone down there to like scare somebody. Like he was gonna, I'm assuming he was going down to scare the electrician, like because he likes scaring people. But if they know that he's gonna scare them, he's not really interested in it. So like, you know, he gets his flashlight and he has his like Wolfman mask and he has his cape, and then, you know, dropping the Wolfman mask, you know, and then getting into like a serious reversal where he's scared, but he keeps his head. He keeps cool. Kid's clever.
This kid is good.
Yeah. Well, I agree. So, in the meantime, the college kids find one in the road and it's dead and they want to dissect it.
And it looks great.
So, we have a cool dissection scene. And I thought that was a great part of it because, again, it looks like it would be like an alien, and the fact that they built these like just shows you the craftsmanship.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, all of them, like, think of the amount of time that goes into the work of the creature from the deadly spawn. Like, they really are well fucking done.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it a million times, and we'll probably keep saying it, but it is true. It's just one of those, like, you just think about the true DIY nature of it and what can be done when you work within the DIY underground.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I did like the part where the spawn gets into the green sauce.
So, yeah, so the vegetarian luncheon, right? So, you know, it's she's really one of the grandma's one of the greatest parts of the movie.
And she grabs her daughter, or I guess that's her daughter. She grabs her face and she goes like, oh, you always look so listless to me.
It is your daughter.
That's such a mom thing to say. Oh, you're not vegetarian right now. You always look so listless to me. Oh, and then she's talking about her stew. She's like, I have lentils on. Like, she's really excited. And the ladies come over and they're like, I brought ratatouille. You're going to make your stew? She's like, I have Swedish soy balls. Yeah. Like, ooh, Swedish soy balls and ratatouille and lentil stew with green sauce.
Yeah, and the green sauce looks insane. It just looks like a like bright green.
But none of them liked it because it did have a spawn in it.
Well, because
they all
kind
of looked around, and I guess the spawn would taste bad. Like, I kind of thought that they were going to go at the angle where they would all be like, this is the best green sauce I've ever had. My God, it's so delicious. Because they were trying to, like, because it had meat in it, and so they'd like it more. But yep. They didn't go that way. Apparently, the spawn tastes gross.
But then once they start eating it, then you see that there's little spawns all over the house. And they start attacking the vegetarian
luncheon.
Love
when they go
it's
behind
amazing.
The painting. Like, I like how the spawns hide and they go behind the painting and they're crawling under the carpet, like biting old ladies on the ankle. Like, I like that no one is safe.
Yeah.
You know, there's like adults and kids and like
everyone's...
the grannies are fucking fighting off spawns and beating them with their like low heeled shoes.
It's so good. Everyone is a potential feast.
But that's when you start thinking, like, how will the world survive? You know
you
what I mean?
You said that it's during that. Like, you're like, how will they actually, like, how can this ever be stopped?
Yeah, how can it be stopped? It's kind of like on, like, Dawn of the Dead or whatever, where you're like, oh my God, it's not just here. It's everywhere. It's worldwide.
And when you got these little spawns just going around, they could be, you don't think you're going to get them
all?
I know,
I'm going to find all those little suckers, especially in this apartment. They got a lot of places to hide.
There could be deadly
spawns.
Look,
they could get anywhere we could get to them except under our bed. I don't know. I don't want to move our bed. I don't want to know what's under the bed.
No.
It's just like, the last time we got a new mattress and moved the bed, it was like a lot of water bottles and tissues. Checks out for us, right? But you know,
yeah, but you don't be using those tissues to blow your nose right now.
It's so irritating. Like, what the fuck? It's like, who thinks, like, don't suck things or blow through your nose?
Exactly.
I know. It's like, I need like a warning buzzer. Maybe I should just wear a clown nose just so I can't get to it. Well, that's cute. Anyway, so then we cut back to home, and then the teens are arriving, and that's when we get the really cool reveal when science kids come down and open up and check on old psychology unk. And
whoa, T.
He got his eyes chewed out. He was sitting in the armchair, like, you know, writing notes and taking a nap for his next psychological convention. And they just ate his eyeballs right out.
Ate him right up.
But you know what? Apparently, the soft part is where, like, a lot of creatures go, like, when you're getting eaten like that, because, like, they want the easy access thing. So, like, it'd be hard to, like, just get on bones and stuff, so they'll eat your eyeballs first.
Oh, wow.
And I was reading about this, like, this lake that's kind of, like, boiling, and, like, when, like, animals fall into it, like, what, like, gets cooked first and what goes first, because this is, like, a naturally, like, it's a river that doesn't seem like it would be a boiling river, but it's right over some volcanic activity, and apparently the eyes disappear first. Like, if something falls in, their eyes are like cooked out of their heads first. Very vulnerable places. That kind of makes sense. I would think of like crows pecking out my eyes first.
Yeah.
You know, if something was happening, it seemed like the easiest access. You know,
it makes sense.
Because otherwise, I don't know how I would bite on, you know, other things like kneecaps and stuff. It seems hard. Anyway, old Unk didn't make it. And then the whole gang has to like run for their lives.
Except they don't really run. They kind of stay in the house. And that's the thing is most of this movie really does take place in this house. You get the vegetarian lunch and you get the basement, which actually was the guy who made the monsters. It was actually his basement. It's actually not the basement in the actual house.
Oh,
but
it's a perfect basement.
Yeah. But basically most of the movie does take place in this
house. Did he say it was
naturally
wet?
No, I'm not sure. He used it as his studio. It was actually in an apartment building, but he rented it out and he used it as his studio
cool.
as well. So
that's really nice.
But yeah, and again, then you get the spawn attacking and the spawn killing, decapitating one of the kids, right? One of the students.
Oh my God. When like they're trying to run, they're trying to make it a break, make a break for the room with the phone in it. So as they're running, but then the spawn gets closer to them. And that's what I like is that this puppet is like moving and kind of like rolling.
It's in the action.
Them.
You know, yeah. Like that's what's cool.
Yeah. Like it's in the mix. And then, you know, it bites her head and then kicks her body out the window. Like,
yeah.
It's such a good effect. And then everybody else, like, makes it to another room, but they look out the window and they just see her headless body on the ground.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's so brutal. But it's so good and it's so effective. And everything is done in a way that just feels very, you know, menacing and natural, but it's still, like, suspenseful.
What do you think the Deadly Spawn's goal is? Like, do you think
snacks?
But I mean, do you think like ultimately it wants to just snack on the whole planet? Do you think it wants to just hang in New Jersey? What do you
think? Well, I think it wants to snack on everything because like the maybe it got kicked off of its own place because it was too hungry. But like the little spawns at the vegetarian buffet were like in the food processor because they were like chowing down on the spinach and stuff. Like it was liking that too. And then this little spawn in the sink was like, water, this is good too. So I feel like maybe, you know, it had been out on the meteor for a long time and it had just gotten like really hungry. Maybe it's like one of those old dried up frogs in a creek bed. And then when it gets rains and they wake up and then they kind of like re-moisturize and they got to go out. Eat stuff.
Do you think you would be good in this situation, Tara? Like in a house where there's a deadly spawn, do you
think? No, I am not good at being quiet.
Interesting.
Because I would be sniffling and sneezing and coughing.
But that's
I'd
true.
Be like,
that is
trying
true.
Not to cough.
But do you think you would
clear my throat like that?
But you are also very. Once you know,
oh, I go into action mode.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What would be some
business
of your.
Mode.
Tactics to go into business mode against the deadly spawn.
I mean, tactics against the deadly spawn.
Yeah, I mean, like, how do you think you would?
What
go
am
about...
I gonna do? I'm gonna make sure, like, that I know where a clear exit is, but I also have a place where it can't approach me from behind. I'm gonna make sure I have weapons available. If there's something, just like this kid, anything I can use to like, light it on fire, stab it.
See, I feel
it.
Like fire is a good one, right?
Yeah, I know, but like there fire is like there are less fire elements all surrounding us than we think. Like I would grab that insane hairspray I have and like maybe a lighter. Like that would be a good thing to do. Like grab some stuff out of the bathroom. But then our bathroom doesn't have a clear exit. You know, it's got the window that the spawn could get in, but it's harder for us to get out of. So I don't think that would be a very good place to be. But I think it's you don't want to corner yourself. You want to have options, but you also don't want to be taken by surprise.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I guess you would have to have a different line of defense against the small spawn than against the big spawn. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
Then you want like something real concrete between you and that big, big spawn.
I feel like you just think fast. I would be really comfortable with you, you know, being with you in this
situation.
Yeah,
I would get an action. I would get some action.
And I would trust your plan.
Yeah.
I feel like you would have a good gauge of like, all right, these little guys, this is how we got to stop them.
Yeah.
You think quick. You know?
I mean, but my first instinct is, you know, weapons.
Yeah.
Weapons,
you
know,
yeah. I mean, because you got to just chop these bad boys up.
Yeah. I mean, just like I'm trying to like think, you know, we even have like the rolling TV stand. Maybe we could stand behind the rolling TV stand and roll towards the deadly spawn because it can't get through that. You know what I mean? Like,
or
use that like a
or
shield.
Or the break gives us a little time to
use
like...
it like a shield so we're behind it so it can't like get to us. It has to eat the TV first. And we just roll behind the TV stand and like hide behind it. And then the deadly spawn gets that. And then we break left and right and we go the other way. Maybe we could circle back and get it from behind unless it's got heads coming out of its back too. Maybe throw a blanket over it. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Didn't think about that. We get a tarp. You know?
And it just sort of like confuses
it
a little bit.
We could
maybe?
Take the rubber sheet off the bed.
Whoa.
And then you take the rubber sheet off the bed. You throw that over the deadly spawn. He has no idea what's going on. You know, he has to fumble around for a minute. You know what I mean? Then you can just like break left, like break right. Get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, stomp. Put on some boots. You know, wear sleeves so the little guys can't get on you. Put on a football helmet. You got one. I don't have a helmet of any sort.
No.
Do we even have? Put on your GIMP mask. And then we all run down the hall. Jokes.
I see, again, this is why I knew you would just go. You already, I was watching you go into action was so exciting for me.
But I do have a lot of wig heads around here, so we could like do a little decoy thing.
Well, just like...
But I don't know what I have that's explosive necessarily.
But just like our man does in this movie, the kid, he puts the flash powder in a head, in a wig head, puts the wig head in the mouth.
Ooh, I could take that stuff. I have this like, this stuff that makes your like, it makes your hair stronger on the lengths, but the problem is, like, and I've warned Mike about it a lot, you get it in your eyes, but essentially you will go blind. You cannot get this shit in your eyes. It's very bad for getting in your eyes, but it's liquid, so it's easy. So maybe we take my my water treatment for my hair, and we squirt it in its
eyes. But it doesn't have eyes.
Fuck. Well, back to the old drawing board.
But this is true, as a side note, there is, it's literally in our shower, and every time I see it, I'm like, that thing could make you go blind. Like,
don't
why
get it
is,
in your eyes.
Not that I use it, but I'm like, why is it in our shower?
Someone, I warned you a little too hard, but I just thought, like, if it was, like, up good, there, you were messing with it, like, it's water, it looks like water, but it's really bad to get in your eyes. You really do not want to get that in your eyes. So I just felt like I needed to warn you super hard, just in
I'm
case.
I'm glad you did.
You were like, what does Tara use on her hair? And you were like fucking around and like, I don't know, pouring it on your head or something. Not that you would ever do that.
No, I am glad that you like oversold it.
It's good to know. You know, it's good as a reminder to me too.
Yeah.
You know, to not get it in my eyes. It's really bad to get in your eyes. Don't get Wonder Water in your eyes, everyone. It's bad for you.
Yeah.
I do remember when I was younger and I used to like wear my contacts and dye my hair, and then I would get out of the shower and my contacts would be like red or black or blue or whatever I was dyeing my hair, and I would take my contacts out that night and they'd be a color, and I'd be like, ooh, that's probably bad. You're not supposed to get that stuff in your eyes, Mike. Especially not enough to dye your contacts a color.
Yeah, no.
Bad.
You know, we probably have careless enough like youth. Weird bottles of alcohol that we'll never get through. We could just light those
on
fire.
Oh, we could make Molotov cocktails. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Like those weird like remnants of like, here, do you guys want this? And we're like, sure. Then we're like, when you get into those bottles, that's when you should stop for the night. Like when it's like, oh, I'm going to drink this weird white rum that a bartender gave us that they don't use anymore. Like when it's like, oh, we have that.
Yeah.
That's when it's like, you should probably not.
And it's like, I have all these Amaros and it's like, I only can drink so much Amaro. So it's like, once you have like four bottles of Amaro, you have like Amaro for your life. And then I have like white Amaro, which I don't drink. And so that's really flammable. But then we have that weird, the mystery gin is the one where I'm like, we should not drink that. Like if we get into the mystery gin, it's like connoisseur's gin.
That's
something.
No, it's the white rum.
It's white rum?
Yes.
I think it's gin.
No, it's white rum.
Do we drink that?
There's been a night where we thought that was a good idea, and I'm sure it didn't end well.
Man, that is not
good. Or it ended great. I mean, like, you know, who's to say?
Should I go check? Why am I thinking it's gin? I want to look. I'm right, looking. Here I go. I'm going on a fact-finding mission.
Do it. Because to me, that's when we think to get into that. See? Luckily, it hasn't not too much.
Oh, thank God. There's not much gone. It's called Concierge. Oh, Concierge. Not even Concierge. Concierge Gold Rum.
Yeah.
I thought it was gin.
When we like pull that out and like be like, oh, we have a vitamin.
I'm gonna smell it.
We have a vitamin water.
Let's make
and
a
then,
cocktail.
That's when you know we should.
That's
night,
terrible. Oh God, it's white rum. Ugh.
That's when you know the night should have ended.
First thing I ever like as a teen like got sick on was like aftershock and white rum. Really bad time. Really bad time.
And you know, luckily we learn our lessons, and we would never ever do anything like that. You know. You know, no. We would never accidentally.
Yeah,
like,
we're very responsible adults.
Very responsible.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, we'd be fine around the deadly spawn. The deadly spawn comes over at night and we're just like, hey, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah, you want to drink this really weird white rum?
We just put the concierge rum. It's not even concierge. It's concierge.
Hey, look.
Maybe it's concierge. Maybe it's Italian. Conciere rum. I don't know. Well, anyway, Deadly Spawn, the drive-in classic.
I mean, look, it's amazing.
Classic,
yeah, it was, you know, fragmented. Like Douglas McEwan, the director, he didn't even really know it came out until like he saw like a listing for it at a, you know, at a show, and because he was sort of ousted of the production of it. But he still, you know, he stands by it. He said there's things that they did after he left that he wouldn't have done. But you know, I don't think it's important to. It's a movie that you just have to watch as it is, as it's given to you. Yeah. Even though there is some fragmentation, even though there was some scene shot later, I think it all stands.
I think it's pretty fucking solid. I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah, I think it's a hell of a lot of fun if you're in, you know, monster movie, DIY monster movie. And hey, New Jersey, you know, Lineage, we got, you know, a little bit later, we're going to have, you know, Wave Productions out of New Jersey.
Hey.
You know, New Jersey, of course, but is just a breeding ground for DIY. You know?
And the soundtrack
is awesome.
Is really, really great. The soundtrack, I think, is solid and appropriate for what it is. I enjoy that they had the cleanup scene at the end, and then they showed, like, the scientific brother who's, like, absolutely traumatized, and he's like, but they shouldn't exist. Science says they don't exist. And, like, I like that, like, element that they popped into the end. And then when we have the final, like, you know, for another film where the creature comes back
so
to
good.
Life, after the cleanup scene, we get to see why the house looked like a little train set village, and that is because they had a plan for it.
Tara, I think the deadly spawn
mountain comes to life and starts chomping up the world.
I think the deadly spawn is still here with us, you know what I mean? But we would fight it with shitty
how
white
could you fight a deadly
rum.
Spawn that big?
Shitty white rum.
It's so big. It's bigger than a mountain.
It's a big bottle.
It's as big as a mountain.
Well, we go
pretty
mountain climbing on it.
Oh, we enlist all the climbers to come up and conk it on the head with some white rum.
Yeah, we wouldn't do it. We'd sit and watch.
My stomach's hurting again. I'm wondering it's because we're talking about white rum.
I know. I could. I. You know. Generally, you know, this is a shorter ep than usual, but I could tell it was time. Tara, like we said, Tara's been in a state this week, so I knew that there might be a point where, we're like, you know what, we're gonna go and have.
How could you tell?
Ahead.
What was I doing?
Look,
was I wincing?
I've been with you for
did I make a motion like I was gonna puke?
6 years, Tara. I can read the signs, but we did want to make sure to talk about Deadly Spawn, get an episode out this week. You know, schedule wise, we do it is looking pretty good for some good consistency here coming up. So we want to keep that ball rolling.
And you know what? We also didn't talk about the Deadly Spawn, although everyone in it doesn't have a ton of film credits. Maybe like one actor does. They're great. Like, these are great kids. They had great characters. They tried to develop them. They gave good performances. The soundtrack is good. The effects are solid. You can follow the plot. It's fun. It's intriguing. It's campy in its own way.
It's a good time.
It's a great time. Like, I can see why this would be such a popular movie, like at the drive-in, like where you can have attention, fool around, have fun. You know, watching this, like, it's a good time.
It's a great time. Tara, would you say it's the opposite of tooth surgery?
Yeah, it was very much the opposite of what happened with me and at dental surgery. So,
well, Tara, let's let you go.
Although there was that time, like, the fun part was when the dentist kept saying, your tongue is exploring. I know your tongue wants to explore. Your tongue is exploring. Your tongue cannot explore. And she kept talking about how my tongue was exploring. But it was really just me trying to swallow because I was like, I'm choking.
Exploring like it's a deadly spawn.
Your tongue is exploring.
Of its own. Well, Tara, let's let you go disintegrate. We'll see everybody at the Honk Live event Sunday, May 24th. Going to pretty much put this episode right up today.
Oh.
So it'll be out right after we finish recording here. And we'll be back next week. Don't know what with what, but it'll be with something.
Something.
And in the meantime, go watch The Deadly Spawn. Thank you for the support. We will talk to you soon.
Bye.